No more French lessons. Welcome back, everyone.
I propose that we do the entire meeting in another language. Because I can only and since I can only speak French, I'd like it to be in French.
Barbara is fully fluent.
Yes.
Tanya, thank you for staying with
us.
That's the problem. I don't.
Thank you.
Skål.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Or we've got Alan Teixeira, who some of you may know, is our senior technical director with us, and he's going to talk about integrated reporting.
So, I'm a bit concerned about who's chairing this meeting.
I think that actually Martin is.
The lack of control at the very beginning.
I'm helping Martin.
Right. Well, welcome for those I haven't met. I know most of the faces here. We're going to talk a little bit about integrated reporting. I've got an hour schedule for this. I guess it depends on how deep or how far you want to go on this. And it's interesting because about two spaces from me is Martin, and we were both on the technical task force for the Integrated Reporting Council in helping produce the framework that was released last December. It's particularly interesting because I'm about to give my view of the world on integrated reporting. I noticed Jane down there as well. I think integrated reporting means many things to different people. And so I'm going to tell you what I think it is and where I think what others also think it is, and a little bit about what it's not. And most of it's covered in the paper, but I want to embellish it with a couple of examples. And then at the end of this, I guess we have some fairly open questions, and that is, whether you think that integrated reporting is a good idea, at least in terms of conceptually, that what they're trying to do with the program, and what our involvement should be. In the original draft of the paper, I actually said, do you think it's a good idea, or should we just tell them it's a dumb idea and go away? So it is in a bit of extreme on that. So I think the very first thing to do is understand what it is, because for many people, I think. They hear the word integrated reporting, they think of environmental reporting and sustainability, and they say that's not really our business, you should go away. So I want to step back, give you a little bit of history. We presented this to the Advisory Council earlier this week on Tuesday. As part of this, we also had a bit on electronic filing and tried to think about the shape of financial reporting in the future or corporate reporting. And we've got some really quite interesting and reasonably consistent feedback from the Advisory Council, which I was a little surprised at, but actually quite pleased. And I will tell you at the end of your discussion what they said. I'll just tell you at the beginning. So let's step back a bit. December last year, so only a few months ago, the Integrated Reporting Council produced a framework, first draft. They're now planning their second version of that. They think it. After 1 year, they need to revise it, so it's fairly a little bit fluid in the sense. I think there's some very interesting questions being asked, and people have questioned, for example, if the ISB doesn't at least embrace, get involved, or look at this, we could look up from our desks in 3 years' time and discover that we're increasingly irrelevant, for example. That's what some people view. Others think that there's not much of a risk in that. I was involved quite early on in some meetings that were held, and importantly, in terms of location, I've forgotten the name of the place now, Clarence House, because they were hosted by Prince Charles as part of the Accounting for Sustainability Group and the Prince's Trust, in a sense. They really thought that the accounting reporting, financial reporting, was broken essentially, because it was missing so much out. Now, we often hear the quotes, and I take an issue with this with the Integrated Reporting Group. We hear quotes saying you go back to the 70s, and essentially, if you look at price-to-book ratios, they don't use it in that terminology, but 90% of an asset's value, of a firm's value, was captured by accounting, and now if you look in this year, it's more like 20%, 23%. In other words, the price-to-book ratios, there are big differences because economies change. You look at mix of companies and exchanges, and you look at the Facebooks and the Apples and so on, and you look at how much value is not actually captured by the accounting system. Therefore, it's broken. But more so, the original seeds for this, I think, were you'll have heard a lot of discussions about people concerned about their grandchildren, and in terms of saying we have the earth itself has got only got so many resources, we don't change the way we behave, we won't have a future for our grandchildren. And therefore we need to have reporting that reflects the fact that we've got to look after the planet and the environment. And I think that's where the seeds came out. So the word sustainability is very much about environmental sustainability. I was at a working group yesterday in Geneva with the Integrated Reporting Council's working group, and I had a conversation with Paul Druckmann at lunch about part of this. He said he no longer goes to any meeting, if he can, on environmental issues, because all he is labelled as is being, oh, you're that sustainability guy, you're the environmental reporting guy. I think fairly early in as the project developed, there was a clear view that this was going to be quite divisive, because most mainstream investors would sit there and say it's almost too extreme in terms of looking at environmental issues. It's not really focusing on the needs of an investor. And so I think that the whole project tended to, I won't say morph, but it became far more mainstream, to the point that, and I know Martin will attest to this, most of our battles and arguments and debates were about the objective of integrated report. And if you have a look at the framework, it actually says that an integrated report is aimed at the providers of financial capital. It's aimed at investors, essentially. It's the same target group as that we have in our own framework, right? If anybody, I don't know if many people looked in the old value reporting papers that PW, I think at the time, produced, or PwC. Essentially what I think integrated reporting has now evolved into is saying, if anybody's going to invest in a company and is interested in financial performance and other things, it's not just about looking at the financial statements and the notes to the financial statements. There are lots of other things that affect the value, the risks and opportunities that an entity has. Now, take the obvious ones like the environment, for example. An example that came up in the advisory council was water. Interesting, it was the fracking industry, because you think about an environmentally almost insensitive industry, and yet it was the shortage or potential shortage of water. It was one of their biggest risks. You need a tremendous amount of water, in other words, to extract the shale, for example. So the importance of environmental things or physical resources, natural resources, was absolutely vital to the success or failure of an organisation. If you're in an industry, example I used yesterday was the tobacco industry, you look at regulation and so on, it's harder to smoke, well, you try to develop alternatives such as the electronic smoking devices, for example. You look at the way that a lot of petroleum industries, the petrol companies, for example, they look at alternative energy as well. So they're conscious of the fact that, A, there could be limited resources they're accessing, B, they're in environments where they may be getting increasing constraints on what they, pollution levels and things like that, so they have to look at alternatives. And all these factors relate to how well you're performing. We then can move to other organisations that perhaps outsource, and they get their clothing made in developing countries, and you see horror stories in the paper, buildings collapse and people killed, and then they question, well, who's getting their clothing made in there? Now, what that affects is at least two things. One is there's a perception that people are just simply going for the cheapest possible make, and when people don't like that outcome, and they sometimes get legitimate responses, in other cases you get consumers responding by not actually going and buying the product. And that means they have to react in one of two ways. Either they're going to have to increase their costs by shifting back, for example, into other production places. That affects their cash flows. The fact that people no longer buy from them affects their cash flows. I'm always reluctant to use real examples, but while we met one week for the technical task force, it was the week in which there were a lot of newspaper reports about the amount of tax that Starbucks was paying. And we saw newspaper reports in the subsequent days of people were not going to go and buy their coffee anymore. That affects your cash flows, your revenue streams. So this is not just about looking at different types of resources and how well you're maintaining them, but most of the focus is on how they affect ultimately the cash flows of the organisation. And I think that's also, I've heard in speeches when the integrated reporting's been put out, in the public space, that this, and this is no, it's not just about cash flows, it's about maintaining the other assets and capitals, as they call them in the integrated report. My personal view is that ultimately it comes down to how dealing with those other things like natural resources, your people, the intellectual property that you create and how you maintain it, they ultimately affect your assessment of financial performance, which is what the integrated report aims at. The other example I like to use is pharmaceutical industry. Your business model might be, for example, to set up a strong R&D division and you create your own continuing pipeline. Another company may simply go out there and identify new start companies, and so that they acquire their drugs or get keep their pipeline going by looking, letting others do R&D and then going out and actually buying them in. Now, they're just different models, and the question is which one is more, you know, we're asking about sustainability of those models. So these are all these factors, I think, tie in together. So the idea of integrated reporting then is, and by the way, this is one area where I'm a bit uncomfortable with the integrated report, I must confess, is that they identify that financials are very important, but there are at least five other capitals that are important. And so, and I'll forget them, hopefully Martin will tell me if I've got them wrong. It's human capital, intellectual capital, physical capital, manufactured capital, and social capital. So are you a socially responsible organisation? I think you can put the outsourcing and manufacturing might be in that category. You're a company that has pollution. You could, instead of saying pollution, it's more about physical, it's about actually putting noise, visual pollutions, you know, you can say a wind farm's visual pollution, for example. So it's social responsibility, all those factors. And the idea is that none of these things work in isolation. I think that's the criticism of reporting historically, is that GRI and others have come along with a report that deals with just with environmental issues, for example. We've got Wiki that might deal with knowledge. We've got financial, they say, just deals with financial. All of these things are done in isolation. What we need to do is bring those together and show the relationships. And many years ago, I was involved with a company in New Zealand that it was a wastewater and drinking water, and it had a sewage pipeline that was sitting, went right across a beautiful bay in the middle of Auckland. So visually, it was a bit of an eyesore. But they did some costings, and we produced in the annual report a statement about what it would cost for each consumer they had, per consumer, to take that eyesore away by burying it underneath and putting pumping stations in. So they were trying to get across the message, there's some trade-offs here. We can give you cheaper water, cheaper processing, but you get an eyesore, or we can bury it, but you're going to have to pay for that. So in a way, you're pushing one thing and something else pops up. And people want to understand the relationships between these factors. But at the heart of the integrated reporting, my view is, and I think you'll agree with me, Mum, that it's about how these other factors affect, ultimately, financial performance. So the framework's out there. People ask, what does an integrated report look like? It's supposed to be, and the first thing you hear is you get groans saying, here we go, it's just another report. So we've got GRI, and we've got IFRS, and we've got an integrated report, and we've got all these other reports. It's not supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be a replacement for some existing reporting. And there's some experience in South Africa where it's now mandated in the stock exchange. I don't want to belittle the approaches, but in the early phases, I think some of people just took their management commentary or front-end and crossed out management commentary and put in a greater report. I think they also did some work to put some more content in there as well. But my point is that essentially they was taking the management commentary or the front end, the storytelling that go about your business, and saying that really is what an integrated report is supposed to pick up. The Integrated Reporting Council, though, wants to bring more discipline to that, so it's just not just the nice stories, but it actually identifies how important each of those capitals are to you and how they're affected by your decisions and how you make decisions about trade-offs. It's not about changing behaviour. We discussed again at the task force, are we trying to make people be good corporate citizens? Well, it's actually about transparency. If you decide that this is the way you want to operate, We just want investors to understand that's the way you operate. So if you're an exploration company and you're just going to drill until you run out and then look for the next one, that's what you do. There are risks with that. There are rewards with that. We're not trying to make you be a green company and replace everything that you take away. The idea was just to make sure that people understood those decisions that they were making. And then investors would have the opportunity to assess consumer reaction to that, or if they wanted to develop a portfolio of investments taking into account these other factors, they had the information to do so. Question we've got, obviously, is where do we fit in? Now, we're one of the important capitals, financial. The Integrated Reporting Council have got a nice little diagram showing six pillars being the six capitals and saying how important they are. I think we're the left-hand one or something. If I was doing that diagram, I would take that, I'd stick it in the middle, and I'd make it the biggest, fattest one and say financial reporting is central to everybody, because in our organisation, I don't think we have a huge environmental impact. Most of our risks are about intellectual capital, and as I joke, semi-jokingly said, the advisory council, our real assets are our staff, our brilliant staff. How do we retain them to make our brilliant standards? But quite seriously, it is about maintaining good intellectual capital within the organisation, good strong board members, so that we actually produce really good outcomes. And that's what's important to us. The environmental impact, apart from flying on planes around the world, we have very minimal environmental impact. And I don't think we'd have much of a, we don't outsource anything, so social responsibility pretty much not there as well. So if you said what's important to us, it's going to be financial. It'll be sustainability will be about how sustainable our revenue model is in terms of how we fund ourselves. And then it's about, I think, protecting and developing the standards we produce. So I think we're kind of central to this in terms of financial reporting. There's a question that's come up, though, is about integrated reporting. Is integrated reporting going to exist and go off on its own and create momentum and be run by an integrated reporting council? And then we become, a secondary part of that process because we're an input. Others have suggested that what should happen is that we currently have a thing, Management Commentary Practice Statement, and that practice statement uses the word integrated six times. Now, it hasn't got the content structure of identifying six capitals and things like that. But management commentary actually describes that if, for example, you work in an industry that's very sensitive to environmental issues, they can affect financial decision making, and therefore you should be reporting on some of those. So management commentary actually picks up some of those threads. There are people within the integrated reporting community who think the success for them would be that we pick up those threads, review management commentary, and make sure it's a more robust statement or requirement, and then integrated reporting can go away because they'll have basically got that thinking into management commentary. The way to describe that is that rather than calling it something special like integrated reporting, we just have corporate reporting that makes sense. In other words, good corporate reporting. Others think that integrated reporting should continue on its own thread, and I think others think that's fine, it's for somebody else, but it's not for me. We're at this stage now where we've been asking the council, and we have a research agenda and planning. You know, how serious should we take integrated reporting? We have an MOU with them. Ian's been to most of the council meetings, I think it is, in the last couple of years. I'm on the working group. I was on the task force until they disbanded us last week. Job done, I think. And we've been on connectivity and so on. So we work with them because we both have transparency at heart, and investors at the core of what we're trying to do. But what should we do now? Should we be striving to help and just become part of integrated reporting, continue with our own thread? Where should our energy go? So we're very interested to know, because you probably have an interest as an investors, where our efforts should focus, or get some initial feedback from you. And then at the end, I can tell you what the advisory council said.
First, a general remark. When you're repeating the the critic regarding the difference between the market value of companies and the book values. I mean, it reminds me exactly the kind of critics we had during the internet bubble. I mean, just people saying, hey, this internet company, .com, whatever, had a market value of 20 billion and a shareholder equity negative of 1 billion. So the market, the accounting is completely missing something. We all know how it ended. So, and there is also a very big important point. Accountants are there to provide us information about the performance of the situation, not about the value of the business. I mean, this is my job as an equity analyst. It's different, and it has to be different. So if there is difference between the shareholders' equity and the market cap, well, it's not a problem.
What do you think about integrated reporting?
So integrated reporting, okay. So but this is about the justification of integrated reporting should capture everything. I'm the chairman of the Association of French Analysts on Accounting, and we made a comment, we replied to the consultation on this subject. And so before answering, we went to reading some of this integrated report, mainly South African companies. Our general impression was it were interesting documents for somebody that was a, let's say, newcomer for the company to discover all aspects. It's very convenient, fair. When we're looking at the financial information, we were a little bit afraid because this was, in many cases, summarized information or what is important to us. So, and I'm very much afraid of that because what is important might differ from year two to year three or year five, depending on the crisis cycle, etc. So we were a little bit uncomfortable about the incompleteness of the financial information included in this integrated report.
So it was too concise.
Yes, even though it might be 40 pages, but it might not give one of the important information, and that might be misleading in terms of completeness for somebody that was used to more, let's say, usual financial information. Then we had two other questions. The first one was, what document should it replace? If it has replaced the current financial annual report or financial statement plus the notes, no. We want to have a full-scale report. It's a necessity. Then there are some legal, let's say, questions. In many jurisdictions, you have to file, let's say, a 10K or 20F or whatever, which is a kind of annual report. Will it replace that? This is a disturbing question because how do you rely all this obligation and the integrated report? Will one of them disappear? No. And one of the thing also, which for an everyday analyst is very useful, is we fear that having, let's say, summarized financial information included in this integrated report, we will have the full set of figures with the complete notes, let's say 1 month later, which for us is a very frustrating scenario because the base case for us is to have the results, the press release, and all the documents, all the notes. Here, you have the information will be used. If you publish the complete annual report with all the notes 2 months after you publish the results, nobody will use it. And you might be missing a very important point. But that's it. So is there also the problem of the calendar, and what does it replace? This is, I think, key for us to make a judgment on what it can bring.
Let's make a first round now, Jane.
Well, I've read it, and had also had some input into the first after the first draft. I completely agree with you, Jacques. I think thinking about the IASB, I think it's always been an issue to what extent you do get involved in management commentary. So I thought it was good to see the memorandum of understanding with the IARC, and it's good to hear that you've been involved in it. But I think this might solve a problem for the IASB, that this is a way, you know, for your management commentary purposes, this can substitute for it. This can be your management commentary guide. The good thing about it is that it does say that investors are the primary audience, so it is supposed to be about helping people allocate capital. And it does try to introduce some rigor into the soft stuff. You know, if you have a KPI, be consistent about it, have a target, say whether you, you know, and have a stretching one. So some of the examples I've read, the companies have actually confessed that they haven't, you know, they didn't make their targets on these things. So that's why I think it's rigorous enough to substitute for other IASB work on management commentary. Having said that, I thought that there's some mudless capitals, which is a bit of an abuse of the English language. capital should, it's not just financial reporting which should be at the centre, which I completely agree, it's the word capital. Because, for example, you take one of their capitals, which is physical, you know, manufactured stuff, which is, sounds to me like plant and equipment and work in process, the capital of the business funded that. So, you know, the original, you know, capital in its proper definition actually funds most of the other capitals that they talk about, whether it's intellectual property, you know, even investing in people is a, you know, in the end it's coming out of the capital of the shareholders' money that's being put to work to employ the people. So I agree that was all a bit fuzzy. I completely agree with Jacques that my preferred thing is that the management commentary becomes the front part of the annual report. And interestingly, in the UK, where there's already a lot of regulation on narrative reporting, they are so well, they're so complementary that they do just dovetail. So a company that was following the framework would obey most of the stuff that's been laid down by the DBIS, the government department that's dictated new regulation on narrative reporting. Of course, it doesn't make it concise because you'd still, in addition, have to do your detailed remuneration reporting and some other stuff. So that's the other thing, though. It is. So I think that if you have it as the front part, substituting for other narrative reporting regulation, which is great in a country that's not got developed stuff, but I think can even work in countries which has got quite a lot of regulation there already, that's fine. But then you mustn't dumb down the back half, absolutely. And that's always been a danger. The UK had a so-called summary report that it was sending out to retail investors 10 years ago or whatever, and that was just horrible because it was leaving out too much important stuff. And I don't think that's the intention. I think it's very much in the management commentary space, and to the extent that there are numbers, it's things like KPIs which are in the narrative reporting space. So that, you know, that it doesn't, the framework document does not have substitute alternative ways to do a P&L, cash flow statement, or balance sheet. And the other thing is, you know, of course we're interested in companies saying how they think they create value, and you know, talking about more intelligently about their business models and accepting risks. Where it gets a bit dangerous is where they stray into saying that one of the things is they talk about some of the stuff that management just can't control. So you're supposed to present as a sort of value driver that you happen to be in a place where, you know, there could be some big pollution issue, I don't know, air quality or something, which I suppose it's, maybe it's more of a prospectus approach to risk reporting, which might be fine, but there's quite a blurring between stuff that management can control, stuff that it can't control. Okay. So anyway,
thank you.
We're stuck with it, I think, and make the rest of it.
Shall we? Anything else, Jane?
Well, the timing issue is really, it's the same as the annual report. It should be. Actually, the annual, all this information should come out at the same time.
Okay.
Osman.
Thank you. I have to admit, I read this paper with a slightly sinking feeling, not because it's badly written, but integrated reporting is one of those things that's been around for a long time. I don't think it's gone anywhere particularly. And I'm focusing on the last paragraph of your paper where you ask, you know, whether we agree with the integrated reporting as a concept, where it should sit, and what efforts should the ISB give to this developing way of thinking. Taking the last point first, I think it would be nice to get the financial reports right, first of all, and get those to a good quality, a better quality than we currently have. So, you know, in an ideal world, if ISB had resources and had time and had completed some of the high priority projects to a good standard, then yes. But right now, I don't think it's something that the ISB should be particularly focusing resource on. That's not to say that the concept of integrated reporting isn't important or correct, but I don't think you are the guys to be directly involved or spending excessive resource on it. And maybe I'm saying that because although we look at companies across the globe, I guess our primary focus is on maybe on more developed or emerging, but more emerging markets where we have reasonably good corporate reporting, or at least developing corporate reporting. So there are other experts that are dealing with this issue. So I won't take much longer. I just want to say, repeat again. So yes, agree with the concept. I think the way that you've explained it, Alan, has been helpful because it's kind of moved away clearly from this green reporting, and it's much more comprehensive, and I think that's helpful. But I think you've got enough to do with financial reporting to keep you busy without looking at integrated reporting.
So I should say I agree with you. I think this is a cheap way for the IASB to stay in the management commentary game, and it's also a very politically correct way.
Robert,
sorry, just one more point which I forgot about with the management commentary. I know that at the time the management commentary exposure draft was kind of introduced, that people had comments on various aspects of it. But am I right in saying that it's the reason it became a practice statement rather than a standard is because there was no support for the ISB getting into the field of management reporting, and therefore this is, would that not further indicate that this is not an area for the ISB to focus on right now?
Yeah. I wouldn't go as far as to say no support. I think it would we set standards internationally, and some jurisdictions had their own things in place. There's no way you could actually have this as a requirement as part of IFRS at the moment because of these different jurisdictional requirements. That you'd have to say, well, you know, you take an extreme, imagine the US was on board with this, that would be like saying to the SEC, you drop your MD&A and put this in its place. And so we realised that as a practical perspective, it was more a case of interim reporting. If you're going to have a requirement, then this is a standard you could refer to. And the practice statement is the same thing. If you do want to have narrative in like the UK and others, you can actually refer to our practice statement.
But we didn't aim for to have a standard, because that would be a much bigger thing than we wanted to set sort of a minimum requirements for best practice of those who are not really doing the job.
Okay. Robert.
So, I'm going to start off with a question. The audience is the users of financial statements, but what's the objective? I read through the papers, we said it's to provide context, but that's actually not an objective. The objective of financial reporting is to provide decision-useful information in making capital allocations. That's the old definition. But what is the objective? What is the objective that this reporting is supposed to meet?
Read it out. I'll find it.
The objective, yes. What is the objective?
Can I amplify that? Because my question. Thank you very much. That's exactly because we're dealing now in our world with an increasing group of clients of ours that are interested in this issue, dedicated funds, SRI, you name it. You know, people that really want to put money where the good companies are. Let's call it that for just to choose a word, right? And the question that we get is very simple. Do I adjust my beta when I value these firms? Do I add a percentage to sales growth when I value these firms? These are very practical questions, and most of the stuff that we talk about here in the standard setting and all is geared towards getting a good earnings number. I mean, stuff that we can map into a valuation model. I think this integrated reporting should do the same thing if it serves the objective of providing useful information for investors. So is that the objective of what we're after here? Is that the length that we're going to go on this?
I'm going to take a great risk in responding to this, because I'm going to rely a little bit on some of Jacques' introductory remarks, in that I think it's up to you to do the valuation exercise. the idea is, if you go back to those, and I agree the naive statement saying accounting's broken because look at the book to market ratios, you know, they've changed. I think if you're looking at the earnings stream for an enterprise and you're seeing what an earnings over its accounting base, so accounting equity, and it's higher than you're getting, for example, with another company, and you look at most of the companies in the tech industries, and you know, the Apples, the Facebooks, and so on, they have a small asset base but high earnings. And I'm assuming that you actually want to understand what their growth potential is and why there's a difference, why there is that amount of value coming out of there, because the income statement recaptures all the value, value is probably the wrong term. The income statement captures the activities that come from all of your assets that are on the balance sheet and all the assets that are not on the balance sheet. And so when you see these big differences, you want to understand what's driving value. And I think the idea of the integrated reporting framework is to give you a sense of what the most important other things are. So is it intellectual capital? Is it physical capital and so on? And in two ways. One is how they're affecting the ultimate performance. So rather than saying, well, you go work out, you know, how much intellectual capital they've really got, we'll give you some better information about that and how you're managing it. And also, for example, about some information I've got about social responsibility. So because I think there's some evidence, I don't know how strong the evidence is and I don't know how big the effects are, that understanding where people get their, you know, where they do their outsourcing to can affect consumer behaviour. You know, in some ways, some people don't care that as long as the stuff's cheap. In other cases, they will actually affect their sales revenue. So the integrated reporting is not about actually measuring those things and trying to quantify. There are some corporates have tried to actually internalise, in a sense, all these external factors and come down with an integrated profit, so to speak. It's not about that. It's just providing more robust data to provide you with an input so you can do the valuations. And part of that is, for example, you know, when we did management commentary, we said, you know, there are some metrics like sales per square foot. There's no standard for that because some people count. I used to have a standard back in New Zealand about investment properties was 20% or less you occupy. Do you count the car parks, the common areas of walking spaces? What do you count when you do that percentage? And even sales per square foot, churn rates for the in terms of the telco industry, there aren't agreed measures for those things. And the idea is to try and give some a sense of agreed measures so that people, you've got the inputs. Nobody in the Integrated Reporting Council has the expertise to work out how that affects value. But you're trying to get the companies to say what they think is affecting their value. And I just need to make one point too, because I don't want to be a distraction. There is no suggestion that we would define all of these non-financial measures and go and tell you how to measure things in terms of pollution or social responsibility or how you looked after your staff or accident rates. Others are better off doing that. Okay, we would do the financial. The idea question is whether or not there's a framework like management commentary that just says rely on other standard setters to do that. So I think that it's a bigger issue about who might actually set those other standards to give you better data for valuing. So, Judge, I hope I'm consistent with what you said, because that's what I heard you say. This is about inputs, not about trying to quantify this down to an integrated performance number, for example.
I'm going to grab the word right now. I was involved as Alan in the project as well. I think actually many of us know how hard our job as an analyst sometimes is. And why is it so hard? It's not because the financial statements are so difficult to understand. I mean, that sometimes is an issue, but it's what truly makes analysis difficult is that you need to really understand how the company is creating value. And I mean, if you just take the financial paragraph there, I mean, you base your investment thesis not only on the cash flows that you can read in the paragraph, but also on what's the position of the company in the competitive landscape. What kind of dependencies are there? What kind of risks are there? What kind of
If I look back at how much time I spent not on the financial but on understanding all those other elements in your financial, it's probably 90%, and 10% is financials, and they are very important. But actually, it's fundamental to understand how the business operates, it's almost a no-brainer that the information that the IRC tries to grasp with the framework is likely to be very relevant for us for our decision making. If anything that the IRC could accomplish, it would be that it would make analysis much more efficient. I mean, that would be a clear objective. To make an analysis better and more efficient and easier to conduct and take more factors into account that currently are reported. And then you go to the question, okay, what's the role of the IASB? And to be honest, well, it's now in the hands of the IRC. It's their parenting advantage they've gone out and it's under their umbrella. But I do observe that that the input that the ISB also via you has given to helping them create a framework from nil has been critical, and the experience from the ISB as a standard setter in providing advice, how do you construct a standard? I mean, how many times did they ask the question, how do you do that with the ISB doing a consultation? How do you do that with writing a principle-based standard? I mean, I think they deserve your support, there is a supportive role, I think, but it's their project. That would be my take, and I think it's very important for investors.
So, what I hear from here, so. I think we now understand some of the objectives, although it actually sounds like it's twofold. Alan, everything you said about sort of the examples you gave, my initial reaction is they should be included in the financial reporting anyway because they have their material in making capital allocations. If your business model relies on workers that are in a third world country where the factory may collapse and that will have an impact on the reputation of the brand, goodwill, to drag in our earlier conversation, that should be already. Peter's comment is very interesting. That's a second level. There is a market for investors who want to pay, who will accept a lower return for safety or something. And that's a very difficult issue because I'll just throw in a personal. I won't buy or have anything to do with a tobacco company for personal reasons, but I don't mind buying a liquor company. And that's and if somebody else in this room said, actually, they're the opposite. Pardon?
Put your money where your mouth is.
Well, but if somebody in this room said they had the opposite, that they don't mind tobacco for ethical reasons, but they can't deal with liquor, I wouldn't object. So that's where this becomes very difficult to balance what are the right objectives. The second comment is the ISB has if this is ultimately going to be some type of financial outcome. You said the financial pillar central. It's the ISB who has the technical capability of doing that. So I don't think you can dodge the question. I think we have to be in agreement, just from a first principles point of view. We have to be pro-environment, pro-undertrod workers, pro... pardon?
Pro-everything?
Do we really want to be... Does anybody really want to argue the other side? I don't think so. I think there are financial reasons. Therefore... the ISB ultimately has to play a role in this. I don't think you can duck. I think this goes beyond the MD&A, but that's certainly a place to start. And I wouldn't be as fussed about the MD&A because I think there's a sort of and I, by the way, I'm using the Canadian or North American term. You're using management commentary. The ISB should be putting in a floor, and if the local standard is higher, fine. Otherwise, you know, fall back to the local standard. I don't think there's anything in management commentary that prevents you from talking from something that's important. So, and Canada has a very strong MD&A management commentary history. You meet the Canadian requirements, and then if the ISB has some further requirements about sustainability or license to operate or any of the pillars of integrated reporting, they should be there. But I think deep down, you need to get involved, and just because it's sort of the, this is the organization that has the expertise.
Okay, Goro.
Okay. It's a part of my research, but I happen to visit them tomorrow. But anyway, I think that the integrated report would be a rather, not a substitute of financial reporting, but rather the complementary. And the first of all, that the fact they are proposing, like this sixth capital, you know, I don't think this kind of, you know, value creation model will change, you know, a year or so. So this part of information, probably that the, if we have just once, it's okay. And I think that this kind of, you know, integrated type thing is actually that the not providing new information every year, I guess. Probably if there is something, new information, they would be probably, this is my impression, but kind of non-GAAP information specific to the entity, which is currently cannot be provided by financial reporting. And this kind of non-GAAP information is sometimes very important to the capital allocation decision. And these non-GAAP information is quite sensitive, I guess, that to be dealt by IASB. And so I think that it is a good thing for IASB to have a cooperative relationship. Anyway, if you know that even for integrated reporting, the core information should be financial. And this is just a summary information. We may look at the integrated report initially when we look at the company. That would be very informative. But then if we keep on tracking, we need that the financial report, the information provided, the financial information. That Mike, so that your current relationship with IIRC is very appropriate. So, and I don't think that the ISB should place more resources on integrated reporting than now.
Tanya?
Yeah, just perhaps some feedback. I've been very involved with or being drawn into the movement here in Australia in terms of integrated reporting, and there's quite a lot of strong investor activity. A couple of things that perhaps might just help in the discussion that I think are important to point out. I think Robert might have said something about investors are looking or willing to accept a lower return on the basis of sort of an integrated investment approach. Certainly here in Australia that's not the case, and those who are very active in this role are those who actually believe longer term company value is only going to be sustained if in fact a more holistic approach to the performance of companies and a more holistic understanding of what companies are using to create value. And I think it goes back to Martin's point, you have to really spend so much more of your time understanding what the company is doing and how it creates value. And really that's what I think the integrated reporting movement is actually about, is really trying to understand that more holistic approach. The other thing that I would just say, particularly here, is that you are actually at risk. I think we may be at risk companies are already heading in this direction, and at the moment it is a very fragmented approach. But I think there is very clear pressure on companies from a range of stakeholders, and I think that's the other thing to remember. It's not just being driven by investors, but there are a big range of stakeholders that are placing an increasing amount of pressure on companies to create a more holistic reporting structure. Some of that is around strategy, some of that is around sort of the environmental, social and governance area. But it really is providing a lot more information about the holistic approach of the company to its long-term sustainability of return to shareholders. And companies, I think, may choose to go down this path whether we're involved or not. And so I think that's one thing just to be aware that if we perhaps step away from this movement, we may find, as someone said, it may not be 3 years, but 5 or 10 years from now, you know, the IASB will be a less relevant body in the whole reporting structure for companies.
Yeah, thank you, Tanya. Hi.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, everybody. It's been very interesting discussion, and we had one in the Advisory Council earlier this week. I actually attend the council meetings and have been involved for the last 2.5 years. And Tanya's points first, it's interesting, you know, it combines with what Alan said about the framework. The framework has pointed to the users and the usefulness of the information. And that was Tanya's first point, that you're looking at sustainable company value. But there is still a group in there or a theme in there of improving the world, not just the company. So if you listen, I keep saying this, but if you listen to Mervyn King, he's the chairman, if you listen to his speeches, he talks all the time about his children and his children's children and us living in a better world and this reporting changing behaviour and making the world a different place. So there's two streams to why they're doing it, and some lean more on one side than the other and others the opposite. And so we have to think a bit about that. In the comments we've had here today, you know, where does it fit? Is it a substitute for the annual report? Jane pointed out that it helps us actually take some of the responsibility away from us. You know, others have said we've got too much to do already, and we get that theme quite a lot. One of the problems with that is, of course, you never make a change or do anything different. And we discussed that in regards to public sector accounting at the Advisory Council, and that was the main comment was we've got too much to do in the private sector to start worrying about the public sector. But I used to visit David Tweedy and have that argument 10 or 11 years ago, and exactly the same comment was made then. It's very easy to say in the medium or longer term it's a good idea, but in the short term we haven't got the time or money. So that was interesting. Martin said that, you know, we're in the hands of the IARC. Actually, you could turn it around, and they're going to set the future, and we've got to be in there and go along with them. I'm not really sure about that yet. I think the jury's still out on integrated reporting. In Australia, there's a big push, certainly in South Africa. They're very proud of it and think that they're down the right track. I think it'll be much harder to sell in the United States, for instance. You know, we can't sell IFRS too well in the United States, never mind integrated reporting. And then, you know, Robert's saying we have to play a role. And I guess that's the attitude we've taken so far. And we're keeping it under review. And FASB, for instance, have taken a different view and have withdrawn from the council and remained there as observers only. And we talked to them about that at the time. And we took a different view. But I could understand their view and understand where they're coming from. And they were a bit frightened of it affecting their independence and that sort of thing. So we're there. We don't regard ourselves as experts in this whole thing. I don't know very much about sustainability reporting, for instance, and I don't think many of our board would be very expert in that area either. Some might be, I don't know. But we think we're experts in financial reporting. We think, as Alan said, that financial reporting is a very important part of the whole framework. And our attitude, I think, to date has been, well, we want to be in there, we want to be listening to the debates, we want to be part of it, but we want to keep our patch nice and clear and clean as well, and that's financial reporting. And once we move into KPRs or industry standards or environmental reporting or human capital reporting or the like, we're starting to spread ourselves pretty thin.
So how do you look at the management commentary best practice then?
Well,
is it outdated now?
I wasn't on the board for that debate. I was on the outside looking in, but my understanding was there was a quite serious debate in the board as to whether we should be involved in it at all. You know, whether we should do the statement in any way. And I think the compromise in the end was it was not going to be a standard. It'll be an advisory piece. It's non-mandatory. And that's where it sits. And we don't have a lot of enthusiasm at this stage for revisiting it and that sort of thing. And that may be some of what Jane says, because some of that's being taken out and looked after by the Integrated Reporting Council.
Okay.
The only question, I remember some years ago there was also a big discussion in the about future standard setting about making a project on intangibles,
yes.
which partly is going also in the direction of integrated reporting, at least some topics of that. So that could be also a kind of involvement where you sure. Yeah, have the connection with them.
Yeah, if it was taken on, it would be, yes. I mean, the other interesting thing in our agenda consultation 2 or 3 years ago, one of the things I was keen to have included in our initial document, which was, you know, should we leave some time for blue sky thinking? And we got a strong pushback. No, please don't go to blue sky. Stick to the knitting and get on with what you've got. And it was very strong from the constituents. That's what they thought.
Alan, you had a cliffhanger like that. There was a conclusion, a surprising conclusion.
No.
There's no cliffhanger.
No, Ian's done given a good summary of what we heard today, and pretty much I was going to say, if you said what we hear at the Advisory Council, say the same thing. There were a range of views, but I think depends, you can be quite selective about what you hear, but a couple of people said we've got it right. You don't ignore it, but don't jump over too far, and don't drag it over too far. Keep the MOU's got it right. Keep it involved. And as Martin said, you know, we help them by providing a bit of discipline in a sense to the standards setting process. Just keep involved. Probably there are two things that I think. One I want to emphasise that did come out of it today. There was a real fear I sensed of this report being sort of getting a life, and not enough financial information actually being put into the report. If you have a 30-page report and you leave a lot of financial information out and have a summary, that was a risk. And it came up, there was recently, I think, in the UK, it was nearly, the narrative reporting nearly excluded the financial reports. It's now changed so that I think the narrative goes with the financial. And there was concern that you'd end up with just such high-level summary information coming out earlier than the reports that it would be helpful. So that was a comment, that was a view that came up again, which is why we should be involved to protect that space in a sense. And the other one is several people observed we're not partly there, but IFRS 7 on risk of financial instruments has quite a bit of risk disclosure information, which is a little bit like some of the stuff we're talking about in the Great Report. For those who did follow the extractive activities discussion paper, some of the suggested disclosures were on things on known reserves and stuff like that. So it's kind of, you know, there's some measures in there. Now, we didn't create those. We borrowed those from industry specialists who had actually, the industry itself identified some measures that they thought were helpful. But there are your natural resource measures, for example, that helping you feed and assess performance and so on. So I think there was an acknowledgement that we're a little bit into that space, and the integrated reporting was just formalising and broadening it slightly. But very similar messages. Don't ignore it. Don't embrace, don't grab. Just keep an eye on it.
Thank you all. Shall we move on to the next agenda?